Chapter 19. Kept him skipping about in front of my horse pretty smartly. I asked him what he was doing there. He had got his breath by then, and explained that he had meant to make his way to a farm which he understood, from the schooner's people, I suppose, was to be found in the neighborhood. At that I laughed aloud, and he got uneasy. Had he been deceived? Was there no farm within walking distance? I laughed more and more. He was on foot, and of course the first bunch of cattle he came across would have stamped him to rags under their hoofs. A dismounted man caught on the feeding grounds hasn't got the ghost of a chance. My coming upon you like this has certainly saved your life, apostrophe I said. He remarked that perhaps it was so, but that for his part he had imagined I had wanted to kill him under the hoofs of my horse. I assured him that nothing would have been easier had I meant it. And then we came to a sort of dead stop. For the life of me, I didn't know what to do with this convict, unless I chucked him into the sea. It occurred to me to ask him what he had been transported for. He hung his head. What is it? Apostrophe apostrophe says one. Theft, murder, rape, or what? Apostrophe apostrophe I wanted to hear what he would have to say for himself, though of course I expected it would be some sort of lie. But all he said was, make it what you like. I deny nothing. It is no good denying anything. Apostrophe apostrophe, I looked him over carefully, and a thought struck me. They've got anarchists there too, apostrophe I said. Perhaps you're one of them. Apostrophe apostrophe, I deny nothing whatever, monsieur, apostrophe he repeats. This answer made me think that perhaps he was not an anarchist. I believe those damned lunatics are rather proud of themselves. If he had been one, he would have probably confessed straight out. What were you before you became a convict? Apostrophe apostrophe, ouvrier, apostrophe he says. And a good workman too. Apostrophe, but that I began to think he must be an anarchist, after all. That's the class they come mostly from, isn't it? I hate the cowardly bomb-throwing brutes. I almost made up my mind to turn my horse short round and leave him to starve or drown where he was, whichever he liked best. As to crossing the island to bother me again, the cattle would see to that. I don't know what induced me to ask what sort of workman. Apostrophe apostrophe, I didn't care a hang whether he answered me or not. But when he said at once, mechanician, monsieur, apostrophe I nearly jumped out of the saddle with excitement. The launch had been lying disabled and idle in the creek for 3 weeks. My duty to the company was clear. He noticed my start too, and there we were for a minute or so staring at each other as if bewitched. Get up on my horse behind me, apostrophe I told him. You shall put my steam launch to rights. Apostrophe, these are the words in which the worthy manager of the Marinan estate related to me the coming of the supposed anarchist. He meant to keep him out of a sense of duty to the company, and the name he had given him would prevent the fellow from obtaining employment anywhere in Horta. The vaqueros of the estate, when they went on leave, spread it all over the town. They did not know what an anarchist was, nor yet what Barcelona meant. They called him Anarchisto de Barcelona, as if it were his Christian name and surname. But the people in town had been reading in their papers about the anarchists in Europe, and were very much impressed. Over the jocular edition of de Barcelona, Mr. Harry G. chuckled with immense satisfaction. See, that breed is particularly murderous, isn't it? It makes the sawmills crowd still more afraid of having anything to do with him, see, he exulted, candidly. I hold him by that name better than if I had him chained up by the leg to the deck of the steam launch. And mark, he added, after a pause, he does not deny it. I am not wronging him in any way. He is a convict of some sort, anyhow. But I suppose you pay him some wages, don't you? I asked. Wages? What does he want with money here? He gets his food from my kitchen, and his clothing from the store. Of course I'll give him something at the end of the year, but you don't think I'd employ a convict and give him the same money I would give an honest man? I am looking after the interests of my company first and last. I admitted that, for a company spending £50,000 every year in advertising, the strictest economy was obviously necessary. The manager of the Marina Estancia grunted approvingly. And I'll tell you what, he continued, if I were certain he's an anarchist, and he had the cheek to ask me for money, I would give him the toe of my boot. However, let him have the benefit of the doubt. I am perfectly willing to take it that he has done nothing worse than to stick a knife into somebody with extenuating circumstances French fashion, don't you know? But that subversive sanguinary rot of doing away with all law and order in the world makes my blood boil. It's simply cutting the ground from under the feet of every decent, respectable, hard-working person. I tell you that the consciences of people who have them, like you or I, must be protected in some way, or else the first low scoundrel that came along would in every respect be just as good as myself. Wouldn't he, now? And that's absurd. He glared at me. I nodded slightly, and murmured that doubtless there was much subtle truth in his view. The principal truth discoverable in the views of Paul the engineer was that a little thing may bring about the undoing of a man. Il n'y faut pas beaucoup pour perdre un homme, he said to me, thoughtfully, one evening. Report this reflection in French, since the man was of Paris, not of Barcelona at all. At the Marina he lived apart from the station, in a small shed with a metal roof and straw walls, which he called mon atelier. He had a workbench there. They had given him several horse blankets and a saddle, not that he ever had occasion to ride, but because no other bedding was used by the working hands, who were all vaqueros cattlemen. And on this horseman's gear, like a son of the plains, he used to sleep amongst the tools of his trade, in a litter of rusty scrap iron, with a portable forge at his head, under the workbench sustaining his grimy mosquito net. Now and then I would bring him a few candle ends saved from the scant supply of the manager's house. He was very thankful for these. He did not like to lie awake in the dark, he confessed. He complained that sleep fled from him. Elle sommeil me fuit, he declared, with his habitual air of subdued stoicism, which made him sympathetic and touching. I made it clear to him that I did not attach undue importance to the fact of his having been a convict. Thus it came about that one evening he was led to talk about himself. As one of the bits of candle on the edge of the bench burned down to the end, he hastened to light another. He had done his military service in a provincial garrison, and returned to Paris to follow his trade. It was a well-paid one. He told me with some pride that in a short time he was earning no less than 10 francs a day. He was thinking of setting up for himself by and by and of getting married. Here he sighed deeply and paused. Then with a return to his stoical note, it seems I did not know enough about myself. On his 25th birthday, two of his friends, in the repairing shop where he worked, proposed to stand him a dinner. He was immensely touched by this attention. I was a steady man, he remarked, but I am not less sociable than any other body. The entertainment came off in a little café on the Boulevard de la Chapelle. At dinner they drank some special wine. It was excellent. Everything was excellent, and the world in his own words seemed a very good place to live in. He had good prospects, some little money laid by, and the affection of two excellent friends. He offered to pay for all the drinks after dinner, which was only proper on his part. They drank more wine, they drank liqueurs, cognac, beer, then more liqueurs and more cognac. Two strangers sitting at the next table looked at him, he said, with so much friendliness, that he invited them to join the party. He had never drunk so much in his life. His elation was extreme, and so pleasurable, that whenever it flagged he hastened to order more drinks. It seemed to me, he said, in his quiet tone and looking on the ground in the gloomy shed full of shadows, that I was on the point of just attaining a great and wonderful felicity. Another drink, I felt, would do it. The others were holding out well with me, glass for glass. But an extraordinary thing happened. At something the stranger said his elation fell. Gloomy ideas as ideas noirs rushed into his head. All the world outside the cafe appeared to him as a dismal evil place, where a multitude of poor wretches had to work, and slave to the sole end, that a few individuals should ride in carriages and live riotously in palaces. He became ashamed of his happiness. The pity of mankind's cruel lot wrung his heart. In a voice choked with sorrow he tried to express these sentiments. He thinks he wept and swore in turns. The two new acquaintances hastened to applaud his humane indignation. Yes, the amount of injustice in the world was indeed scandalous. There was only one way of dealing with the rotten state of society. Demolish the whole Sacré Boutique. Blow up the whole iniquitous show. Their heads hovered over the table. They whispered to him eloquently. I don't think they quite expected the result. He was extremely drunk, mad drunk. With a howl of rage he leaped suddenly upon the table. Kicking over the bottles and glasses, he yelled "Colin Vivlin Archie! Death to the capitalists!" He yelled this again and again. All around him broken glass was falling, chairs were being swung in the air, people were taking each other by the throat. The police dashed in. He hit, bit, scratched and struggled, till something crashed down upon his head. He came to himself in a police cell, locked up on the charge of assault, seditious cries, and anarchist propaganda. He looked at me fixedly with his liquid, shining eyes, that seemed very big in the dim light. That was bad. But even then I might have got off somehow, perhaps, he said, slowly. I doubt it. But whatever chance he had, was done away with by a young socialist lawyer who volunteered to undertake his defense. In vain he assured him that he was no anarchist, that he was a quiet, respectable mechanic, only too anxious to work 10 hours per day at his trade. He was represented at the trial as the victim of society, and his drunken shoutings as the expression of infinite suffering. The young lawyer had his way to make, and this case was just what he wanted for a start. The speech for the defense was pronounced magnificent. The poor fellow paused, swallowed, and brought out the statement. I got the maximum penalty applicable to a first offense. I made an appropriate murmur. He hung his head, unfolded his arms. When they let me out of prison, he began. Gently, I made tracks, of course, for my old workshop. My patron had a particular liking for me before, but when he saw me, he turned green with fright, and showed me the door with a shaking hand. While he stood in the street, uneasy and disconcerted, he was accosted by a middle-aged man who introduced himself as an engineer's fitter-too. I know who you are, he said. I have attended your trial. You are a good comrade and your ideas are sound. But the devil of it is that you won't be able to get work anywhere now. These bourgeois conspire to starve you. That's their way. Expect no mercy from the rich. To be spoken to, so kindly in the street had comforted him very much. He seemed to be the sort of nature needing support and sympathy. The idea of not being able to find work had knocked him over completely. If his patron, who knew him so well for a quiet, orderly, competent workman, would have not. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.